أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ومن الناس من يشتري لهو الحديث ليضل عن سبيل الله بغير علم ويتخذها هزوا، أولئك لهم عذاب مهين. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. أفمن هذا الحديث تعجبون وتضحكون ولا تبكون وأنتم سامدون فاسجدوا لله واعبدوا.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. My name is Wally Lang, and I have been elected by acclamation, I might say, to introduce our guest speaker for this evening. His name is Muhammad Abdul Hakim Thomas. He was born in Belgium, but he was reared in New York, where he purchased the Quran at the age of 11 and accepted Islam 7 years later in 1985. He has an MA in applied linguistics and a BA in music. He has participated in translations of Islamic publications from English to Mali and has conducted several Islamic lectures both in the Kingdom and in the U.S. He is currently working as a lecturer at King Saud University in the English department in the Institute of Languages and Translation. Today's topic is Thoughts on Music and Islam. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. And there are among men those who purchase idle talk in order to mislead others from Allah's path without knowledge, and who throw ridicule upon it. For such, there will be a humiliating punishment. Do you marvel at this statement and laugh at those, and laugh and do not weep, while you amuse yourselves proudly in vanities? Rather prostrate before Allah and worship Him. The topic tonight is some thoughts on music in Islam. As my introducer mentioned, I have a lot of experience in that area, and I spent most of my life studying music very seriously. I want to begin by saying that music is, of course, everywhere. It's something that's part of being human. You find music in every society, all over the world. Just like you find marriage, or you find language, or you find folklore, or dancing. This is something that you find in all cultures. From Mecca to Mississippi, you'll find this. Music surrounds us everywhere, wherever we go. If we're on a bus, if we're on a train, walking around, television, of course, film. We find music is just, it's just everywhere. Now, Islam, of course, as we know, is a comprehensive religion, dealing with all aspects of life, and music is no exception. Islam does talk about music and teaches us about music, just as it teaches us about marriage and folklore and the other things that I mentioned earlier, things that are part of being human. Islam is not silent about music, although some people say so. We find that there is some controversy, actually, among Muslims concerning music. And I can say from the outset that I'm not here to settle every controversy, simply because I'm not qualified to do so. However, I hope, inshallah, that I am qualified to give you nasiha as a Muslim, and as someone who has a little bit of experience in these matters. So inshallah, tonight I hope we can take a look at music in light of our religion, in light of Islam, and in light of some experience, both personal experience and experience of those in our society. As I mentioned before, I spent most of my life studying music. I started when I was about maybe this big with the Suzuki method of violin, which is a method by which you give the person the instrument and just tell them to go and play. And then later on they'll develop into great musicians, supposedly. Later on I studied piano and guitar and baritone and several instruments, and also music theory. And later on I went to the university I attended this Indiana University School of Music, which is the largest music school in the United States, where I studied classical and jazz piano. Before that, though, I had a lot of experience playing music professionally and also teaching music. I taught piano for a long time to adults and to children, and also taught music theory. And I've had some very interesting experiences working as a musician. Now we find in the West, as well as in the East, that many times the people who are involved in music tend to have a certain character. We find, for example, that people who are very, very serious about music sometimes tend to get a little bit arrogant about it. We find, for example, classical musicians will practice 8 hours a day, and they're very, very serious about it. So serious that they feel that people who don't do that are not real musicians, and they should not waste their time being around such people. We find also, a lot of the time, among musicians, we find things like drug abuse and other corruption. We find this also among people who are involved in other arts. A lot of the time artists feel that they are a segment of society that do not need to follow the same rules as the rest of the society, that they are somehow special, and that they are on the cutting edge of the way the world should be. And they will reject the norms of the society, such as religion, for example, and such as other conventions. I found in my experience that that drugs particularly is a very, very, very large part of the music scene, not only with rock music and jazz music, but even with classical music. People become involved in drug abuse. We know, of course, that music is so powerful, and it affects the emotions to such an extent that it can be, in fact, a substitution for spirituality. People become so involved in music, it becomes like a religion, almost. And they have a spiritual experience brought about by both listening to music or playing the music. One of my experiences I had when I was a teenager, I was playing in a rock band, and we were hired to play at one particular club for a child's confirmation. A confirmation is something that's done in a Catholic church in which a young man or young woman, young man in this case, is confirmed as a Catholic. From this point on, he is considered an adult Catholic. And so we went to play the music at this confirmation, and the father of the child came to us, and he came to me in particular and said, "Listen, if you guys want to do anything, just go ahead and do it. If you want to do anything beforehand, go ahead." So we said, well, we thought it sounded kind of strange, and we said, yeah, okay. And then later he came back again, because he thought that maybe we didn't understand him. And he said, "Remember, I'm saying you can do anything you want beforehand, so that you'll play the music very well." And he said, okay. Finally, he said, "Look, if you want to go and smoke some marijuana or take some other drugs, just go ahead and do it." Because his feeling was that if we were high and if we were under the influence of these drugs, then we would play very, very well. So we happened to have some drugs with us at the time. And we he invited us to his van. He had a van there. And he said, "Just stay in here for a little while and do whatever you want." So naturally, we did what he asked, and we came back with our minds not really with us. And when we got back, we started playing the music, and we thought it was good. And we found that we had a tremendous effect on the people that were there, that they were ready to do anything that we told them to do. The lead singer, for example, told all these people, there was a large display at the area. He says, "You know, just take part of it and break it. Take one balloon and pop it." And the whole place was destroyed in a matter of seconds. It was incredible. So not only were we not quite with our senses, but the rest of the people there were not with their senses at all. Now, of course, there are two things operating here, both the drugs and the music, but they came together. And we find that oftentimes they come together. Later on, of course, we found out that the club were very angry at us for causing all this damage, and the boy's mother was very angry at us, even though the father was the one who wanted us to get so high in the first place. That's just one of many, many experiences. Oftentimes we found that when we were using drugs and playing the music, we thought we were just playing the best music that ever happened, ever, in the whole world. We'd be playing and say, "Wow, this is great." And then the next day, when we were no longer under the influence of the drug, we would listen to the tapes and say, "Wow, that's terrible. How did that happen?" But of course, that was the effect of the drug. Now, I'd like to take a look now at some of the major music personalities in the world, particularly in the West. Of course, if I talk about rock and roll, everybody knows that these people are often involved in such activities. You find some music singers, for example, use so much drugs that they die of it. I can think of another one in particular who would have so much sex when he was out doing his concerts that he actually took out paternity insurance so that in case a woman were to sue him and say, "Hey, I'm carrying your child," he'd say, "Hey, no problem, I have insurance." So there's nothing to worry about. This is true. For example, we find in America the personality of Elvis. Elvis is a singer who became so popular that he was almost worshipped. And I've heard one woman in particular talk about believing in Elvis after he had died. Some people, of course, claim that he never died. People collect relics of Elvis, just like they might try to collect a relic of Jesus by chance, P-I-E-C-E, and a piece of some sort of drug. And there are many, many others who found a similar fate. In the field of jazz music is an Afro-American art that came about in the 20th century. We find that just about all of the major figures were deeply involved in drugs and other corruptions. Jelly Roll Morton, he was the first great composer of jazz music. And he was a pimp. A pimp is somebody who sells a woman as a prostitute. This is his profession. He did music on the side. He was a hustler. He cheated people out of their money. And he was extraordinarily arrogant about his music. He claimed to have invented jazz on such and such a date and thought that nobody else was any good. And he is the father of jazz composition. Duke Ellington and Dizzy Gillespie, they were involved in the big band era, in which they would play music and people would dance, men and women dancing together, just going crazy. Charlie Parker is another one who is celebrated as probably one of the greatest musical geniuses of jazz ever. And he died a heroin addict. Although he was considered a genius, he spent a lot of the time lying down in the gutter in the street and died like that. Coleman Hawkins was an alcoholic, another great jazz.